I'm Blair Sanderson.
And I'm Ken McIntosh.
And this is the Surf Fantasy Podcast.
You!
This one is coming down to the wire. Wilco, we'll see if he got up in time. The crowd's already cheering like he's got it. As Wilco now runs through a pretty solid section, drills it on the backhand, straight up vertical again, and he'll get dropped off out the back.
Where were you when Wilco shocked the surfing world? I will tell you where I was. I was laying in bed in Rincon, Puerto Rico, listening to 18-year-olds from all over the United States rage on their spring break at the bar across the street.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was a sick trip. I'm just back. And it was actually the only part of the contest I watched live this time, I'm sorry to say, guys, was that final of Wilco, but I couldn't miss it. I've been a Wilco fan for years. I mean, I remember when he came so close at Jay Bay to actually winning his first final, only to be defeated. I watched him struggle for the next season, barely made it back on tour. I was with him during the crazy wetsuits, and he was rollerblading to the beach. I've been with him all along, and I could not be happier. Wasn't on my team, mind you, but still, nothing but love for my man Wilco.
You are such a good sport, then, to be happy for someone who is not on your team.
Everyone is happy for Wilco. Yeah, I think you'd have to be crazy not to be happy for Wilco.
Can you explain to me why this is exactly? What, we love Wilco?
I mean, we love Wilco because when he came on the surf scene, he's the exact opposite to the sort of groomed type of robot surfer that you see these days. He's also the opposite to the sort of Brazilian jock, have to win to feed my family surfer. I mean, Wilco came in, long hair flowing, literally rollerbladed to his first ever WSL contest on the Gold Coast. He just wanted to have fun. I mean, it was a strategy. He came on the tour, said he'll give it a go, and he just had that attitude. He was the party boy. He was seen out late drinking beers. He just didn't care. He was a throwback to the old style of professional surfer from, back in the day. And to see him come so far, I mean, he's had great performances along the way. He's been honest the whole time. I remember a Chopu saying how terrified he was, and then he had a great performance there on the Code Blackswell. I mean, he's just been a lot of fun to watch. I've had him on my team a ton.
Yeah.
He's broke my heart a ton.
Yeah.
And but to see him win,
you and I are so different, because if he's not on my team, I'm shocked and I hate the guy for winning. Like so what I do is I find all the faults. I don't like Matt Wilco surfing.
Really?
It's so boring. I will say that in general, backhand surfing just doesn't get me excited, especially in small waves, especially if there's not going to be the air game. If it's just these hacks, it's the one hack.
Yeah, it's a hack, but it's a hack like no one else is doing. What you need to look at is as the board goes up the face of the wave, it's actually going past 12 o'clock.
Right.
So he's turning so hard up that face, he's bringing it up, back around,
I know,
big
but
spray.
That's, and then maybe and even bring it back the other way so that you're going, in the opposite direction of the peeling wave when you come back the other way, right? So
exactly.
Like up at 12, snap back this way, again and again and again and again. And even in the commentary, because I know you weren't watching all of it, and I think they were talking, it wasn't necessarily about Wilco.
I caught it on the heat analyzer.
Like Medina. Oh, you did?
Yeah.
What, you caught? So you did catch every heat then?
Oh, I watched every wave.
You did
ridden.
See every
oh,
wave.
Oh, yeah.
Ridden.
I just didn't
oh,
watch
okay.
it live.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's so funny when you watch it that way because you miss so much of the commentary.
Yeah, that's true.
But, they did point out, at least when the right-handers were up against some of the goofies, that, especially when Stuart Kennedy was up, they were just saying he's able to offer so much more variety with, the moves that he's able to do because he's on his forehand, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know, I just happen to agree with that. I just find that the backhand, it's the same thing. And Wilco's arms, I don't know, you've accused me of the same thing personally, of having really straight arms. And it just looks monkeyish.
Yeah, no, I've heard people hate on his style. I mean, even after the win, people were hating on that. They didn't like, they said he had a particularly wide-legged stance. But I can let all that go, A, because he's so fun on land and so fun to cheer for.
Yeah.
But B, because it's so functional and the power he's bringing to it. And the difference there is, I mean, you've heard me hate on Adriano de Souza a lot in the past for his style. The difference to me is Adriano de Souza's style, it's ugly. But it's also his sort of approach to surfing and ugly is that he's only trying to win. Where if anything, Wilco's style is just pure aggression. I mean, he's going that wide so he can hit that lip with everything he has.
Yeah.
And I mean, as far as the criteria goes, I think no one can argue that he didn't have the variety of major maneuvers because he is doing the same maneuver over and over again. But if you look
at
speed,
it's not the variety of major maneuvers, but rather just like the linkage of major maneuvers.
Yeah, well, it's the speed, power, and flow. Yeah. I mean, and it's all connected for him because every time he hits one of those powerful backside turns, it's like the next one is even more powerful. And he gets in that rhythm where, I mean, every turn is harder than the next until the end of the wave.
Right. So you're telling me, the thing is that we shouldn't really go into this too much because we're talking about strategy, not about our personal preferences.
It's true. You're right.
But like, and the thing is in the final two, I do believe that, you know, I think that Wilco probably did deserve that one. But even then, I did have more fun watching Andino compared to Wilco.
Yeah, you know, I thought Andino surfed it really well.
He looked so good.
He did.
He looked so good through a lot of that competition. And so what I just want to come to right now is in the last podcast, I talked about how I had chosen Andino and you hadn't, and you asked me why. And I remember, you know, that you asked me, well, why him, you know? And the best answer that I had really was, well, he did this like one straight air that I really liked. And I felt that I hadn't quite brought enough analysis, enough justification for putting him on my team, that I took him off. So my team did even, like, if you listen to the last one, my team did worse than what I had even said on the last podcast.
Yeah. So are you bringing him back for this contest?
That's the million-dollar question. In fact, he is on my team right now, definitely.
Okay, I'm not. I haven't jumped on there, but I am bringing Wilco back. And I know you're a stats guy, so I'll back up my emotion with a little fact for you. If you look at the last decade Quicksilver Pro, 50%
of
the winners at the end of the year won that first contest.
Here's the thing, though, is that Wilco won, arguably, I mean, we can't know for sure, but quite possibly because Toledo injured himself in one of the final rounds against Wilco. It was Wilco Toledo at one point. And, you know, you could say, you know, and obviously every heat is going to, you know, be different. But it just feels to me that Toledo could have easily won that contest, like the whole contest. And that would have made sense for me, right? If Toledo won this one, I could easily see people saying, hey, you know, and guess what? If you win this one, you've got a good chance of winning the whole thing. Yeah. But in this case, I feel like Wilco is probably going to be
You think he snuck
other,
this one in?
Yeah, and he'll be the other 50%, right? Because let's not forget
that's true.
That other 50%.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, but I do feel like that I do want to put him on my team. And, you know, a part of the reason that I do is because I think that it is important to look at, like, recent past performance compared to last year's past performance. And that's where I violated a couple of my own personal sort of rules when it comes to fantasy surfing. And one of them was look at who's got momentum, right? Like, don't just look at who's won it, like, who's got a good history at this break. Because if you do that, you're going to have Kelly Slater on your team all the time. You're going to have Marco on your team all the time. You know, there are a lot of guys that look good historically that just aren't there. And the one, so this is the killer for me, man, is that I took Andino off and put Pupo on because, you know, and I had a better sort of like line on it. He has done seriously well.
Honestly, Pupo's peaked as far as I'm concerned.
I know.
Pupo peaked 2 years ago and he's done.
The thing is, though, is that what else got me screwed up about Pupo, though, is that Scott Bass, who, as we know, hosts Down the Line Surf Talk Radio.
Yeah,
and
shout
Surf
out.
Splendor, right?
You.
Anybody who knows podcasting and surfing knows those guys. He was a booster of that guy. And at the time, I didn't even really know why. I was like, I don't know, but Scott must have the inside track on something, so I'm going to, you know, give this guy the benefit of the doubt, plus the past performance. He was a dark horse for me, for sure.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I know he had low percentage in terms of the amount of people that picked him, so I just thought that I'm going to get this guy on, and if he does well, you know, that's what I'm always striving for, right? That one guy that no one else chooses. You know, and the thing is that I was kind of right. Scott Bass, it turns out that he practically invented surf fantasy, like that he is the guy behind the surf fantasy website.
I know. I knew that. Well, I didn't know he had such a role to play in the fantasy surf website, but I knew Scott Bass from back when he used to be the moderator of the Surfer Magazine forums.
Right.
When I started reading it there.
That,
and I mean, they still talk
that's
shit about
that,
him
on
that group. Yeah. And he does get a lot of info there. But yeah, I mean, have you heard that chat he had with the commissioner of Fantasy Surfer?
Yeah. Well, that was the thing, that there was like a missing podcast from the Surf Splendor. So I went sort of searching for Scott Bass's. Yeah, no, I listened to the whole thing. Yeah. Did you find anything insightful in terms of, you know, his discussion with Ray Bergman? You know, because he would be someone that we would be interested in talking to on our show.
Yeah, it's true. I just want to know, for one, if Ray Bergman is also Groundswell, who is the moderator of the Fantasy Surfer forum. Because I give that guy a lot of credit for putting up with all the shit that goes on there.
Yeah,
you were telling me, apparently.
You haven't even seen any.
Oh,
of the
man. For someone that scours the message boards, I haven't even been on them.
It's back.
I'm going to have to look it up. But yeah, thanks to everyone that, you know, left good comments and negative comments or any comments at all. And yeah, reach out to us. We have an email address. I don't know what it is.
Surffantasy@gmail.com.
Yeah, so send us your comments. You know, we want to hear it. We're trying to really grow this thing. We love fantasy surfing, and we're happy that people are actually tuning in.
So
who would have thought?
Who grounds Will is? I don't know. But he, and it was interesting too, because he said, you know, if you're interested in talking to someone with surf, the Fantasy Surf page, let us know and I can arrange for somebody.
Okay.
So that kind of made me feel like maybe Groundswell isn't Ray Bergman.
Yeah,
or
maybe
he's
not.
Just talking about himself in the third person.
Well, we need answers, Internet. Give us the answers.
Maybe we'll get some answers on that. But anyway, so I was listening to that interview as well. And I don't know. The thing too is that in terms of doing an interview with him, I feel like, or with whoever is going to be representing the page, I want to wait a little bit because I really feel like you need to have good questions.
Yeah, well, I have a lot of questions to ask him. If it is, I mean, that's why I want to know if it's Groundswell.
But they have
because
to be questions, too, that you can't just, because he answers questions when you just post them up anyway,
yeah.
You know? So it can't just be like a factual sort of clarification question. I want to really be able to ask him questions where, you know, the liveness of the conversation will bring out the nuance that I'm looking for rather than, how do you seed people or how do they seed it? I know it's obviously WSL that does it, but like all of those kinds of technical questions, you can just ask them at any time. Anyway, it's great that we have at least a connection.
Yeah, well, anyway, we'll set that up in the future. But I mean, to get back to this contest, I sort of feel like this is the part of the year. It's the most exciting time. The season's just started.
Yeah.
There's such a small gap between the two contests. I don't really feel like we can sort of talk about the last contest without talking about Bells.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, you said you did bad. So why don't you tell me a little bit about what you're doing differently this time?
Well,
should we do a little comparison?
We could do a little comparison, and we can also, I mean, in terms of like one of the segments that I really enjoy, the habits of high achievers, a little bit different this time though. You know, if I just look at the habits of high achievers, basically from the last contest, it's really hard to sort of gain any insight because, hey, guess what? All of the high achievers had and Dino and Stuart Kennedy and Wilco, you know, they're like big surprise.
And I think too, I'm a little hesitant to draw too much from the first contest because again, it goes back to my same old complaint about not being able to run a contest over the best part of a swell. I mean, a lot of those early rounds where we saw the big guns get taken out, they're a bit of a crapshoot, you know, a lucky dip, the Aussies would call it. You just, I mean, the wave, there wasn't enough opportunity, I think, to really judge. You know, are these rookies the real deal? I mean, Stu Kennedy, I think, undeniably was surfing very well.
Yeah.
Looking really good.
Yeah.
But again, I mean, he was surfing in against Slater when the waves had those huge flat sections and Slater decided to paddle out on his banana board that's meant for, like, big waves.
This is, like, what half the tour is like. Like, if this is your complaint about the tour, I guess you did mention that it is because this is it. I mean, the next contest might be the exact same scenario over again.
Well, that's my fear because I've been looking at the forecast. I don't know. I mean, we're jumping all over the place here, folks, but we're a little pressed for time today, so bear with us. But, I mean, I have been looking at the forecast, and it could go a couple ways. It's going to start out on the first couple days of the waiting period with a little pulse of groundswell.
Yeah.
So it looks like we could be surfing at Bells. We might not have to move over to Winky Pop.
Like day one?
It looks like it could go day one or day two. There's going to be a little pulse.
Yeah.
There's going to be another little pulse before the weekend. And then on the weekend, it looks like we could actually have, like, proper 5-foot Bells bowl.
Right.
So my fear is they're going to want to get a few heats out of the way
in
these inconsistent little conditions.
Yeah,
and we'll be right back where we were at Snapper.
So, but that's the thing. That's why, I mean, fantasy surfing lesson number one is don't go after the guys who are solely good in good conditions. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
But Bells is so tough because, I mean, you couldn't have different waves. Like, if you compare Bells Bowl to Winky Pop, I mean, you're comparing, you know, power surfers to air surfers. I mean, they're so different.
Yeah.
It's tough.
So, Stu Kennedy, you going to put him on or not?
No, I'm not putting Stu on. I mean, this may change again tonight. I've never changed a team. I always say this, but I've never changed a team more than I have in the last 24 hours. But no, I'm not going with Stu. I've added Wilco though.
Did you?
Yeah.
And that's the thing. So, and I think we've already talked about this. So am I.
Yeah. He's back on my team.
By the way, just to get to the habits of high achievers, my little thing, one thing that I found somewhat interesting because the Habits of High Achievers segment is about looking at the top performers and seeing what they're doing and what we can learn from them, okay? And one thing that I did see was that none of the top 10 performers in that last contest chose Jordy Smith.
Huh.
And Jordy Smith had a really high choose rate. Like, I think that he was somewhere up in the 40s. Let me just make sure that that's actually correct. I have to scroll down so far because he did so crappy. Yeah, 41%. Now, he was a pretty high-cost pick. So you can see that a lot of the guys who may have done really well, it would have been hard to squeeze him in. But this is the thing, is that those top 10 guys still had some bombs, right? Like, it's not like they had all, like, you know, really
how many points
finishers.
Did the winner have? I didn't check. Was it?
I think it was like around, it was high still.
It was
like
still high. Oh, okay. I was wondering if it was low across the board. Yeah.
But that's the thing, man, is that there's so many people. I mean, who knows? It'd be interesting to track where the top 10 go from here in terms of the surf fantasy, because I have a feeling that some of those guys, they got lucky, man.
I think you're right.
I think they got lucky.
Yeah. So now, what was your score? Was yours a straight throwaway?
Straight throwaway. This is the worst event result
you've ever done. Okay.
I believe so. Mid 600s.
Yeah.
Somewhere
around. I'm right around. I think I was around 730.
I'm in the bottom 2/3.
Oh, okay.
I'm in the same category of people that like aren't even, you know, filling their team completely, probably.
Oh, okay. You know, I've had people that have won one of my clubs with seven surfers, two contests in a row last year. It's something I actually contemplated.
Could they have had room for more surfers and they just like forgot to put them
on? No, they maxed out their money, went with seven, and ended up winning the clubhouse.
That as a strategy,
it's true.
As to whether or not, that's a good thing to do.
So you had Felipe last time.
Yeah. So, you know, he did okay.
Yeah. And he did okay for me too. But who are you replacing in terms of big money now that Felipe's out for three contests?
Adriano de Souza is on my team.
Oh.
He is on my team. And I should have had him on the last time. You know what I mean? Like, what was I thinking? And I also, and it was between him, okay, and Mick Fanning. And a lot of our, by the way, our top performers either had one of those two guys. He's definitely a favorite for the people that do well in fantasy surfing. And here is the thing, okay. Adriano de Souza had 5% pickup rate in this last contest, okay? So we're looking at Jordy Smith. He had 41%, and if anybody knows anything, he's a crappy pick. I picked him. I don't know why I did that. I got fooled. I have no idea. De Souza, he is the freaking champion of the world. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no one's
coming
picking him. I know.
So Mick Fanning had like 32%, right? So he's got six times the number. There's just a prejudice about Adriano de Souza among people who play this game, and that's why he's worth picking up. The thing is, he is so expensive.
Yeah, and that's me. I actually flirted with having, and I mean, anyone that's listened to this knows I have no time for Adriano.
But you're smart.
But I started looking at the numbers of people that are taking each surfer in the last contest, and I said, man, maybe I got to do that. But my nod to that bit of logic, I'm going to take Fanning. So I couldn't quite bring myself to do Adriano de Souza. I'm going to take Fanning. He didn't have as high of a percentage as I thought.
Yeah, but, 32.
My other nod to that is I'm dropping John John. And this is a controversial move for me because John John got some points last time.
70% pickup.
That when I saw that, I dropped him. And know who I'm replacing him with?
Who?
And this is when you talk about, how can you not pick on past performance at Bells, especially if there's a chance it's going to be, proper Bells. I almost think the other way. How can you not? It's such a tricky wave to surf. It's off speed. There's sometimes a barrel section. So I'm picking up Parco because he's done so well in the past. And I figure if Parco was able to perform at that, mediocre snapper, I mean, it's his home break, but still, he's not known as a guy
in
little waves. I think he might be on a bit of an upswing. And so I'm picking him up for Bells. A plea to the WSL now. Please don't try to wrap this up on Easter weekend. Hold out till Easter weekend. Let us have the early rounds in some good solid waves and wrap it up the following weekend. The long-term forecast looks good.
Parco?
I think it's 7,000.
Okay.
Yeah. So I could have had, which is what I picked John John up for.
Actually.
Yeah. Okay.
And just to correct you, Ken, once again, it's 7.5 million.
Oh, you're right.
So
7.5
much
million.
More expensive than what you're suggesting there. What about Mason Ho?
Mason Ho, man.
He's on my team.
I had him on and off and on and off last night. He's on. He's my passion pick. It's been between him and Stu last night. I was sitting on my couch. I was drinking wine. I was just trying to channel my inner Mason Ho. I took some clothes off. I tried to imagine like I was on the beach, like naked in Oahu, like entertaining, girls that are there, traveling. I tried to get inside his brain, and I compared that to Stu, and I got to stick with Mason. And I got some good points out of Mason last year. I mean, all he has to do is make round three. 1,500, make round three.
Did he score well outside of Hawaii?
He did. Well, last year he won his first round at Bells, actually, and made it right to the third round.
Is that right?
And came close to winning his round three as well. He only lost by, I think, 2 points.
Because the other thing I was wondering about, and this is maybe a total outside concern, but when did he learn about this? Like, was he in Australia already? for the Gold Coast, because that's like a major time difference. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And I'm not a huge fan of like blaming things on jet lag, but that could be a factor.
I think he would have known about it well ahead of time because he's a Rip Curl surfer and it's a Rip Curl event. So I think he was going to be a Rip Curl wild card, whether all these injuries had struck or not.
So he might have been there.
I think he already knew he was coming.
Just to fly the flag for Rip Curl.
And I mean, as far, he's been on the search. Like, you know, Rip Curl's bringing back the search this year. Yeah. So he's been doing a lot of trips. He hasn't been just in Hawaii, but he's also coming off an incredible winter in Hawaii where he was a standout. I think he has a lot of confidence. And I think the other thing that will play well in his factor is Mason's a guy that likes to do airs where people don't generally do airs. And that's something that in the past, if you can bust sort of an unexpected air off a fatter section at Bells, it's such a surprising maneuver to pull there that in the past it's been rewarded by the judges. So we'll see.
We'll see. Because that's the thing. With the air game didn't seem to be as rewarded. I mean, I know there wasn't a lot of it in the last contest, but it didn't feel like the air game was getting as much respect. I don't know. Could this be a trend for the season?
Yeah, it could be.
Who else are we talking about here? So yeah, no Pupo. Okay, so here are a couple of picks that I put on, all right? Italo Ferreira. I'm putting him on.
He's back on my team, too.
Yeah, so because the thing is that I had him on, and so he was a disappointing person to have on my team for the last contest, but he was showing promise. You know what I mean? And I'm just hoping that, you know, he's not going to become frustrated and realize that that was not his fault necessarily, that that was just sort of the circumstances, and that he's going to keep going. I think he's really good.
Yeah, no, I think Italo's a real deal. And he's on my team. And I'm also keeping Italo Jr., little Italo, you could perhaps, Caio Abelli.
You are.
Yeah, I thought he did really well at the last contest, and he got me some decent points. So. Yeah,
14% of people picked him for the last contest.
Yeah.
And I think that up to 4 people picked him in the top 10.
Yeah.
So.
Now, he's someone, he's the guy. If there's one guy on my team, I think I'm keeping.
Wait, first of all, tell me about him then. Why Abelli? Why is he so good?
Well, I just like the way he surfed in the last contest. I mean, we had been talking the previous podcast about some of the research. Like, he comes into it as a fully formed surfer. Like, he doesn't look to be something that sort of has the jitters. He doesn't look to be sort of, if you look at Kanoa Igarashi, for example. I mean, he paddled out at Snapper, and he looked like a boy amongst men.
Right.
Like, he looked like a junior NSA surfer. He did. NSSA surfer.
The thing is that I this was the complaint, too, that he looked like he wasn't quite there. Or he didn't know what he was doing, but... I don't know, Igarashi.
You thought he looked all right?
I thought he looked okay.
I mean, I think, you know,
He won, like, some heats.
Well, yeah, he won a couple.
He won 2 heats.
Yeah, anyone could win a heat at Snapper when it's like that. It's honestly, you know, if you happen to get the wave that gives you a section.
I wonder if he's just being underestimated, like, even by the judges, so if he just sort of shows up.
Maybe if it runs at Winky and it's on the small side, he might have a chance. But if it goes to Bells, I mean, you need to have some serious power to tackle Bells bowl.
He is off my team. I almost feel like with him, like, I put him on as a risky play, and now he's sort of did me some good, and so I'm gonna sell. Like, it's almost like a buy low, sell high.
I know. Sometimes I wish Fantasy Surfer was like that. Like, you actually got rewarded with the money that you gained, but you don't.
Because it's true. Because who knows how many people will pick him? He was picked pretty high, actually. In fact, I think more people picked him than Abelli.
Yeah, but I mean, that's just the comparison. But I think Caio, I think if he did well at Snapper, I could really see him excelling, especially if we get, you know, a nice. Proper Bells wave. I could see him putting the power into it. He's on the team. But then one thing I didn't like about Caio, so I'm going to give him a little advice.
It's the team, not your team.
It is. It's the team, man. We're on the team now. Caio, you need it. You need the eye of the tiger. This idea that when he paddled out with Parco in that heat and they had the 2 restarts and they sort of came to an agreement between the two of them that they would paddle back in as some sort of protest. I mean, that's not something that you want to do when you're competing. What Caio should have been, I mean, if anything, he should have said, yeah, sure, Parco, head on in, and then caught the next wave and left him on the shore. I mean, you can't
Welcome
be making,
to the tour.
Don't be making deals with veterans. You got to hassle the veterans. Right. I mean, you got to make those guys, especially someone like Parco that couldn't be more comfortable at his home break. If he's not happy with the waves, great. That's the perfect situation. Definitely don't. Make any agreements or any deals with him.
You want that Wilco aggression. I saw him kind of doing some like yelly business.
Oh yeah, I want him on the next level. Like,
I want that aggression too. That's why I like DeSouza. Remember, like in the final, or you know, that he sits on surfers if he's got the lead. You know,
then
people will say like, oh, that's why they hate DeSouza. Wait a minute, now how is that difference, right? How's that different? DeSouza sits on a guy in, you know, pretty negative sort of way, and you know, a trick to trick, you know.
The difference in my mind is Adriano has to do it. Like, Adriano has figured out the only way he is going to win is to play tactics. Where I think Caio can play tactics, but I think if he has that great heat strategy and just that Eye of the Tiger urge to win. I think that'll put him over the top. And I honestly could see Kyle winning the whole event.
Speaking of the Eye of the Tiger, you know, you're talking about being extra aggressive against Parco. You know, when you look at some of the matchups, like, you know, these massive upsets, like, so Kennedy took out Slater. Who else did he take out? Did he take out Medina as well? I think he did.
Yeah, he did.
Right? And I wonder, you know, people look at that, and the commentator too, the commentators were even saying, like, I think it was Ross Williams who said, like, okay, he left it out there. His tanks are empty after Slater. There's no way he's going to beat Medina. And there he goes, and he beats him too. And I wonder if when you're facing the best in the world, that you almost just relax a little more, you know, that the pressure is almost off in a certain sense. And so you're just like, screw it. I'm going to throw everything I can and no one can fault me because that's what I have to do to beat the best. And if I lose, well, I lost to the best. You know, I'm just throwing that out there because when you're looking at preliminary matchups, you know, if you have a guy and then you see that guy going up against someone who's the best, it might make you think, oh, I'm not going to pick him because I don't like that matchup. He's not going to win against this really good guy. But maybe in some cases, going up against the best guy is an advantage.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're going up against the best guy in the early rounds and you win, I think that confidence is going to carry you through, especially if you're a guy like Stu Kennedy, who is an experienced surfer.
Right.
I mean, this isn't a rookie. I mean, he's never made the World Tour, but he's been around for a long time, and he's definitely surfed, I mean, a lot more contests in Australia, especially than, I mean, half of the tour, including some of the veterans. So I don't think he's going to get over frothed. I think some of the younger surfers, you might, when you reach that pinnacle, you know, you've beat Kelly Slater for the first time in an early round, I think you might... It'll almost feel like you've reached the top of the mountain. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this is
before
it.
Before you even, like, before the button.
Yeah,
the
before
heat
the heats
like,
even matter, really, you know? So I could see that with a young, inexperienced surfer. I don't think, you know, with guys like Stu Kennedy or even Mason Ho, for that matter. I mean, I heard a rumor Mason Ho was on acid last year at Bell's. I mean, that was going around the fantasy surfer boards.
That baseball player that played for Philly, have you seen that documentary?
Yeah. I mean, I hope he was. I mean, I know he likes to dabble, so why not?
Anyway, I don't know. I kind of think that even, like, I take your point that he's experienced, but you'd still, it still feels like when you're coming in, like, I just wonder, so even if he is experienced, right, and then you're coming into the World Tour for the first time, it feels like maybe the pressure is off if you're up against the best guy, even, you know what I mean? But
because you got nothing to lose.
Kind of, you know, like, so finally, after all this time, I'm finally here, but now I'm up against Kelly Slater.
Yeah.
The only thing, of course, is that Kelly Slater never wins anything, so it can't be that much.
I think it comes down to experience, too. I think if you surf a lot of surf contests, you learn to deal with that pressure. But it also comes down to your personal sort of approach. I mean, I think some people deal with it a lot better than others.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's true of any competition.
We just needed to see that first contest to see what these guys are doing. Connor Coffin, on or off?
Yeah, he's still on the team. I really like the way he surfed. And I mean, if there's ever a place to pick him, you know, it's Bell's and then obviously Jay Bay later in the year. I think he's just going to tear the bag off that. You know, long walls, barrels, you know, he can do it all. So I think he's going to be all right.
Keeping Medina?
I think I actually misspoke here when I said I was keeping, because I'm looking at my team now on my phone. I changed this. I think I might have actually got too drunk before I finalized my team, because I am keeping Gabriel Medina, but I'm not keeping Italo, or I'm not adding Italo Ferreira. Because I was sort of in my head as I was doing that. I was like, how can I afford all these good guys? And I can't. So, yeah, so I don't have Italo, despite all those kind words I sent his way. You're not on the team, Italo.
This is good, though. You're getting it down, right? So this he'll be your regret. That's
yeah, or maybe I'll change it up tonight. Who knows? But, yeah, Gabrielle's on there. I got Mick, Gabriel, Joel, Connor, Kyo, Matt Wilkinson. I got Mason Ho, and you brought him up earlier. One of your, you did pick him. I got Jordy Smith. I put him back on
the
team.
You put him back on. Dude, I just told you, don't put him back on.
I know, but I did.
Habits of high achievers, man. Top 10. None of them put it on.
I know, but
he's
he's
wrong. There's something wrong with that guy.
Yeah. I mean, I think...
41%.
I think the inner turmoil I'm feeling right now is probably reflective of a lot of the people at home trying to finalize their teams. And, I mean, I no guarantees that the team that I'm talking about in this podcast is going to be the team tomorrow morning.
It's hard. I can't tell you how much pain... Like, seriously, when Andino kept winning and winning, you know, and I just had taken him off my team for stupid poopo, it hurts, man. That really, really hurts. Like, you know, it's one thing to just watch surfing and be happy for the guys that you like and then be a sad, let's say, with the guys you like don't do well.
It's true.
But then if you personally are manipulating things, you know, not to do with the outcome, obviously, but you've got your own vested interest, like stakes. It's hard.
Yeah.
I find it's hard.
No, it is. I mean, it's what's so exciting about the game. You know what I mean? Like, it's something that I definitely don't feel when I play fantasy football. Because, I mean, I don't know enough about that sport. I haven't, you know, spent years watching it. Like, I'm a casual fan. But I feel with the surfing, like, yeah, I should be doing well. Yeah. And I do, you know, it'll sound a little strange, but I genuinely care about some of these guys. I mean, I've seen them since they were, I've been watching Chloe Andino since he was, like, literally a child showing up in, you know, other surf videos.
Yeah.
I mean, and back then everyone, it was a...
he was, like, in diapers on the beach kind of thing?
Yeah, like, he was literally, like, I don't think he was quite in diapers. I mean, he might have been 10 and he was on a boat trip. And I think it was Kelly had the quote that or it might have been Parco. And he said, that's the goal. We all want to be on tour when brother gets on. And that was sort of the goal at the time, all knowing that he was sort of being groomed for success, that if they could just stick around till he gets on tour, that they would have had a good career. And now, of course, they're all on tour together, and he's been on tour since, you know, he was Kanoe Igarashi's age. He's been on tour since 18.
You know what killed me, too, about Andino, and this always happens to me, is that as soon as the broadcast opens and then Andino catches his first wave, commentators are all like, oh, and he's really matured this year. And he's put on all this weight. And I'm like, where were you guys 20 minutes ago when I needed that advice? And it was like taking him off my team.
Oh, man. I honestly...
I saw was like a mustache in the picture. And I'm like, get out of here.
Yeah, I did like a NASCAR reject or something that stumbled
that
in.
That happens all the time. Whereas is that the commentators are like, okay, so here's the scoop. This guy's going to win the whole thing. And I'm like, my God.
I don't know why. I don't know why our surf broadcasters, if you can call them that, or the surf commentators, which I still don't know if that's actually a word. I feel like it should just be like surf commenters.
Right.
But why do they have to be so fucking emphatic all the time? Like, why does everything have to be, that was the greatest wave, or the, you know, big turnaround?
It's their job, man.
But why can't they just be honest? You know what I mean? Like, not every big turn is the best turn. I mean, and things like that, like, the idea that they would try to judge anything by that first contest is to me just ridiculous, because it was just such a toss-up.
Yeah.
I mean, bad board selection, mediocre waves, you know, people that have never surfed against each other anymore, tons of injuries. I'm talking Slater, but you can't argue that banana board was a good idea.
Let's not even talk about it.
Oh, but anyway, I got something else for you on Jordy.
Well, you know, just a second. Hold your thought on Jordy, because I'm just going to go against the grain on this one.
So okay.
This is something here, okay? I'm going to say that the broadcasting, like the commentary, is fine.
What do you think of Bede?
I'm good. Oh, I actually do have a point about Bede. What do you think of this? It's a conflict of interest. You can't have the coach of a server broadcasting at the same time. Like, I'm not saying that he has an influence on the results based on what he can say in the commentary booth.
Yeah.
But to me, it still feels like an apparent.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they do make a point. They make a point that the beach announcer is separate than the announcers in the booth. So the people on the beach and in the lineup aren't hearing what's being said in
it's
the booth.
True. And it's not like the judges go back and watch the broadcast afterwards, but to me it just feels like if you're having someone that's being paid by the WSL to, you know, represent its interest in the broadcast, you can't then also be paid by one of the contestants at the same time.
I mean, they're all gambling with insider information anyway, so who really cares?
Well, but the thing is that, okay, so here's the other thing, by the way. I did want to ask this, because we were talking about how, John's got the coach, right? And this is going to, like, make all the difference, and we've been talking about all these sorts of things, you know, because this has, like, become an issue now. These guys have different coaches, blah, blah, blah. Don't these guys all have coaches?
No, I think a lot of them don't. I mean, Kelly Slater definitely doesn't have a coach. He used to have Belly, who traveled with him when he was on Quicksilver. He was sort of a manager, but he wasn't really a coach.
All these guys should have coaches. Like,
you think?
Well, you and I both come from somewhat high performance backgrounds in amateur sport, and my coach, anyway.
Do you really?
I have a background in high performance competition, of course.
What did you play?
What did I play? I was a gymnast, guys.
Oh,
I represented Canada on the world stage.
Really?
For a niche event called tumbling.
Tumbling.
Yeah, tumbling, like the floor, you know, like flips and all that.
Okay.
Stuff.
Well, no wonder you seem so comfortable in the whitewater there when you're tumbling off your fun board.
All over the place. That's why, and I could do one of my best moves is a handstand on a longboard.
Really?
Yeah, guy. Oh,
that's impressive. I had no idea.
You should see the reaction on the beach when I whipped that.
Do you still have your tights?
In the water. See, now I knew you were going to go there. All I'm saying, bro, is that the coach was everything. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I wouldn't go to a contest and not have a coach.
No, I used to be on the national canoeing team for Canada.
Thank you very much.
And I mean,
you have like a weird disproportionate body where your arms are like giant. You got small little legs that kind of like fit into a little kayak or a canoe.
No, I was a canoer, so I don't have that. I'm not that disproportionate. A little offside it. Yeah, a little trouble. That's how I learned to surf. I was down Florida paddling.
Was your coach important or not?
Yeah, he was as important as could be. I mean, he basically raised me. He was like a second father to me. And, you know, but I think surfing is different. I think in surfing, you can think too much. I think surfing is the type of sport. I mean, I tend to go back to these UFC comparisons, but I think it's the type of sport where you have to do a lot of, you just got to surf a lot and get that muscle memory, but then you got to be free.
Let it go.
I mean, I think people get in trouble when they find themselves in heat.
You need a coach for that too. You know what I mean? Like,
maybe you need a mental coach. I don't know.
Well, yeah, but that's basically what a coach is. Like, especially at the competition itself, you kind of need that person who's been with you throughout that then can remind you about what it is that you need to focus on, right? And so you have that consistency. So the coach is there coaching you. And maybe that's the difference too. Like, I don't know how much time these surf coaches spend with their athletes when they're not competing.
Yeah.
Like, does, you know, Davey Cathles, is that, no, is it, who is John Jones? Durbidge.
Bede Durbidge.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Does he, like, spend all his time now with John Jones?
No, that was a one-off. I think he just came over to Australia a little early and did some work with Bede. Yeah.
See, that's no good. You know, I think that if you have, like...
You're going to live with a guru.
Well, look at Wilco, right? I mean, that we kind of thought...
Oh, my God. That's the only thing I don't like about Wilco this year, is that he has that little rat, fake Irishman coaching him. My God.
Last year, we knew all about his coach, right? And it turned out to not really do much
exactly
for him, right? But over time, maybe it did. You know what I mean? And that's the thing. You got to have that.
You know what? As long as they don't interview Glenn Microhall, he can coach him all he wants. As long as I don't have to hear him squeak his way through any more friggin' interviews.
I mean, I guess he's still on, right? That Micro is there and, you know, he's going to.
Yeah, I mean, why? I wouldn't switch anything. I wouldn't even change my board shorts if I had won this contest.
You'd just be like, yeah. Micro's probably like pretty high right now, I'd say.
I think Micro's always pretty high on helium, but I don't know. Anyway, enough about Micro. Back to Jordy, man. I got some stats for you. Because I was trying to find a reason last night to get Jordy on my team, and I actually found a new Surf Stats website.
You did?
Yeah, it's called, I'm just looking it up here. I had to write it down. So yeah, it's called surfstats.com. And it has a really cool table where you can break it down. You know, it's similar to what WSL is doing with their stats,
right,
but I find it's even in a more useful format because it's like a spreadsheet and you can sort it by all the various, you know, different things. But the one that struck me with Jordy is he has the highest average heat score at this event over all the years he's competed.
Really?
Yeah. So I found that telling, and I hope that it's true as well. So yeah, check that out, surfstats.com.
Yeah, you know what?
Sponsor us.
I want to see too. And the thing, and what should be happening, and the thing is, I think the Fantasy Surfers website is good. I like it, but they should be trying to get as much statistical information on there as possible. Like, if you are running this website, you don't want people going to other websites looking for stats, right? I mean, why not just have all of that stuff live on your website?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, when you see the way people make their picks, I question how much the Fantasy Surfer fan is really interested in stats. Because, I mean, if they were, you know, would 77... I mean, I think most people pick on popularity.
Yeah.
And that's why no matter how bad Slater does, he's going to be on more than half the teams.
70% yeah. For John Jones.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, let's look at the next contest and see how many people still have Felipe on their team and don't know he's injured. You know what I mean? Or how many Aussies kept Freestone on his team and don't know he's injured. That guy was a letdown,
I suppose those are... Who?
Jack Freestone?
Yeah.
I had him.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck.
Did you? Yes. See, I knew not to put him on.
You know what? I think
I was saying the last of the podcast, he's a younger version of John John, you know, that he can pull out the clips or whatever, but that's it.
I mean, I just think, I don't know, maybe just go back, do some more photo shoots with Alana and just later, man. Never again.
Yeah, because, you know, and maybe when it gets...
I'm sorry he's injured, obviously. Speaking of injuries, did you see poor Owen?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You watched some of the women's? You see him in some of the shots when his sister won, right?
Yeah, right. Tyler Wright.
Yeah, and he was congratulating
him. Apparently, for the first time, has publicly stated that she believes she can win the world title.
Oh, well, there you go. That's another thing that surf commentators like to say. I swear I heard her say it last year, but anyway, I don't know, man. I love Tyler Wright. I loved Owen Wright, too, and I liked Mikey, although he didn't do much for my team.
Well,
I know, disappointment. Whoa. But yeah, Owen looked rough, man.
It makes me feel good just to be with you and know that you did. What was your score, anyway?
I was like 7. I think I was between 730 and 750, somewhere in there. I was in the top 1,000. It might be sort of like a low keeper. That's about the best I can hope for.
Yeah,
well, I bet the best I can hope for is it's a throwaway. Yeah. But, you know, it's early in the season. Know what else is interesting? Did you notice, as far as scoring goes, that they've changed the scoring system this year?
Say what?
Yeah, so you actually, in the past, I think it was, you got 200 points. So if you pick the winner of the contest.
Oh, yeah.
The winner was
250 and 175 now, right?
Yeah, so the gap is larger. Yeah, where it used to be, like,
is
not as much
right?
of a gap. Yeah.
The gap is larger.
So picking the winner is more important than ever. And that came up in one of my clubhouses. This is really...
Picking the winner?
Yeah, because the guy who actually, he's our... I mean, he's the bank. You know what I mean? He takes the money and he keeps the stats organized. And he had put in our little message group where we keep in touch that he, that our another buddy of ours, Jason Van Meer, had won because he had been doing some of the math himself, like projecting into the next round. Like, oh, well, based on who we have, you know, either way, Van Meer's got it because I think he had both people that were in the final.
Right.
But because Brian... picked the winner,
yeah,
and the gap was larger than he anticipated, he ended up winning.
Right.
Yeah. So there you go.
The thing, too, is, and that was actually the other, because I'd mentioned right at the top of this podcast that it violated some of my own core principles, and that one was try not to weight too heavily on past performance, like over the past year over year. Look at more immediate results in terms of performance, what you want to base on a surface performance, right? The other big thing was make sure that if you, like, just gut check yourself and look at your team and ask yourself, how many of these guys do I think can actually win the whole thing?
Hmm.
Because if you don't have that guy, you're nowhere, right? So you really want to kind of look at these guys and think to yourself, okay, yeah, you know what? I can see him winning. And I just didn't maybe – the thing is that, I don't know, I'm looking at my team the last time, I think it still was okay. It was a crazy, crazy, crazy – contest.
It was. But that said, so who on your team is going to win? Let's pick our winners.
Okay, so here we go. So this is exactly what I'm going to do. Okay, so Adriano de Souza, he is going to win this contest. And then I do. So I've got Wilco because of this thing. He's got the heat success, breed success. We're going to roll with that. I'll put him on. Italo Ferreira, I think that he's won a contest in the past, at least one, right? He's won one.
Ooh, I don't think he did win one last year.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. I don't know, man. I don't think so. If I'm wrong.
Anyway, the thing is, even if that's not true, the thing is that I don't want to only pick and make a decision on who I think it could win just because they've won it before. I'm also leaving the option open that people who haven't won before can win, and I'm putting Italo in that category.
God, I mean, looking at mine.
And look, so hang on.
You got more. Oh, you think everyone's going to win?
Let me finish. No,
I didn't ask who could win. I asked who do you think going to win?
No. What I'm saying is that you need to be able to look at the guy and say, do I think this guy can win?
Okay.
I mean, you know, with a reasonable sort of probability, right? So I'm looking at Mason Ho. Do I think that he could win the whole thing? It's possible. I mean, you know, at least, like, we've seen him get to the final in various contests. I mean, it's like the whole last year is a bit of a blur. And I'm sure it was, like, big waves at the time when he did it. But I just know that he has at least the competitive instinct to get into very late rounds,
yeah.
Right? So then I also have Gabriel Medina. And so then I got Dontas. Like, basically, almost, I feel like the only guys who I also probably won't win that I have are Connor Coffin. Hopefully he'll do well anyway. And then, like, Sebastian Zietz, I got him, too. And the reason I have Sebastian Zietz on there is because he was just so cheap. Like, in order to afford De Souza, I had to kind of drop
down. Yeah, you got to compromise.
Or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I think you might be setting your bar for who could win a little low.
A little low.
But
yeah.
I would throw Banting in there, too, man. Why not? He's on your alternate list.
See,
maybe someone will get injured.
I wouldn't say that, right? I wouldn't say that about Banting.
Right.
So just to prove that I wouldn't. And I did concede. Yeah.
I mean, you've given me some food for thought, though, because looking at your criteria, but applying a bit more sort of my less
feeling.
Generous feeling to it.
Yeah.
Looking at my team, I honestly think the only guy I have on here that I could see winning this contest is Mick Fanning.
Oh, okay. Well,
I think he really needs
a
win.
Like, and the thing is,
I don't have this. I have Gabriel.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I was looking at him upside down. Brazilians look all the same upside down.
Possibly true.
Jordy Smith. The thing is, I would even put him in that category of could win just because he, you know what I mean? Well, you said so yourself. He's got this high heat total, average heat total, and then he has won in the past. But, yeah, he might be on the low end of who do I think could win it. But, yeah, I think that's a good one.
I mean, it's a hard thing.
Advice.
It's like who
really
I think
look,
could win it
win?
Or, like, who
win?
Do I imagine actually winning?
Because what happens
And when I really think hard about it, I don't see anyone.
You need a better imagination. That's your problem.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe I need a better team. I'm leaving right now and changing my team.
That's what happens to me. It's like I lose. Like, so, you know, you lose a couple of guys, and supposing they're your marquee guys, then you look at your team and you think, man, I don't think any of these guys are going to win. And that's when you realize I should have put more guys who I think can win.
But by that judgment on your, would anyone have thought that Wilco could win before he won?
No.
Anyway. It's tough.
That's why that contest was messed up.
Yeah. I mean, any other thoughts on Snapper before we wholly put it in the past?
Well, I already made my comment about Toledo. I don't think so, man. Like, it was a real mind-blowing event for me. Like, right away, I was just down at the dumps for, like, a long time. I'll say, too, that I was getting to a point where I was wishing for Andino to lose in rounds where it would probably still be to my advantage to have him carry on. You know, like, that there, I can't remember what the statistical sort of scenario is, but, you know, you want to sometimes wish for certain surfers to go ahead rather than others, just for the advantage of your team. And I was still wishing for him, you know, to not do well just because I didn't want him to, like, especially, for instance, if I'm competing against you, you know what I mean? Like, so supposing you and I have like a little side bet going on and Dino is up against your guy, I might still want Andino to lose just because I feel so badly about having not chosen him.
Okay. I see what you're saying. So you want him to lose just so you don't have the guilt of having not picked him.
Exactly. Yeah. So as I see his ascension,
yeah,
I'm thinking,
That's how I'll be feeling about John going into Bells.
Oh no. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if John goes out and rips the bag at
the
Bells.
The thing is, you got to stop thinking about it. That's the thing, I know. Too, is that you got to be decisive because you'll just kill yourself. Because what will happen is that, you know, no matter what happens, you're going to feel bad because you sort of entertained every guy. By the way, I just wanted to ask quickly about Flores. What do you think about him? He seems like, I really like him as like kind of a dark horse guy because he is a winner. You know, he's got that winning way.
Yeah, I don't think I watched a lot of him on the Heat Analyzer. Did he look good at Snapper?
I cannot remember.
I mean, because he was on the upswing last year, but it's just unremarkable.
He always sort of flies under the radar for me a little bit, but then, you know, he comes up and wins an event here and does pretty well there. Like, I don't know. The thing is that there's some other weird stuff, too.
Yeah, you know where I could see him doing well, not at this contest, but at the next contest, because they may actually, instead of doing it at Margaret River, they may move it to North Point,
right,
which is a lot more likely to be, you know, a barreling wave. And that's where he tends
so
to excel.
Where put him on.
Yeah. So
think, yeah, like if you were saying, you know who I'm going to put on Flores, I'd probably think, oh, man, maybe I should put Flores on, too. Like,
no, it's just I haven't.
You don't like him in this style of waves, is what you're saying?
No, I mean, I think he could do good in this wave. He doesn't seem to have the juice this year. I haven't seen much in the off season from him. He didn't make a particularly huge impression in Hawaii this season. I mean, he didn't really make headlines.
Right.
I mean, I'm not there. I mean, he might be killing it, but as far as the media that I follow, I haven't heard enough
heat.
About him.
Yeah, no, and the heat is important. I think that that's one thing that, you know, you got to have that heat coming in. By the way, so we didn't touch on it a little bit, but I did want to just mention it because that was one thing that came out of the interview with Ray Bergman and David Scales there. Is that right, or is it the other one?
No, it's Scott Bass.
They both have such cool names. Is he was saying that a lot of people get pretty preoccupied with trying to avoid friendly fire.
Yeah.
And his recommendation overall was try not to worry about it too much.
Yeah. I mean, it's impossible to predict. I think I got a false sense of the importance of that because in the season where I did really well, I was doing a lot of the ASP wedge, and now there's a new one.
It's no good.
I mean, you guess one thing wrong, and then everything else reshuffles. So it's hard. And then not to mention if there is an injury, the wrench that throws into everything.
So the only thing is, though, is that, you know, so but there is still the consideration. Like, for instance, I was calculating this out, that it is possible to pick the top four guys in terms of like the price on the fantasy surfing and the bottom four. Now that may not necessarily correlate to who the seeds are, but all I'm saying is that it is possible, let's say, to pick the top four seeds and the lowest four seeds, and that would be a mistake.
I think it would almost have to be, because by round three, the most people would be four people.
I mean the thing is, who knows how it might not juggle out quite that way. But it does seem like you're going to get a ton of friendly fire there, right?
Yeah.
So, but if that's true, right, that it's possible to pick teams where you have and you can know in advance that there's an abundance of friendly fire, then it feels like you can also know that with other choices to a certain degree. But I still haven't quite figured that out yet.
It's almost like the closer you get to the middle, too. There's like a sweet spot. It's like the very top are always going to be against the very bottom.
You have the same problem with the middle. So
with the very middle,
Because if you've got one that's right above the median and one below,
they're always going
to
hit it.
Go against each other, right? You make yourself crazy trying to think about it. I think maybe that's what he was trying to say, too, is like, you know, don't. But the thing is, I was playing around with a scenario where I had all three surfers in a single heat. You know what I mean? I could pull it up, but it was something like Medina, whatever. And I'm just not going to do that. Like, I'm not going to go into a contest knowing that two of my guys are automatically going to get kicked around too.
Yeah,
even
that's
with
true.
The one going through. No. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it'd be hard to go in with confidence in making that pick.
So that's the thing. So I still do, and I'm even finding with the team I have now, I do have a little bit of friendly fire in those first rounds. Not the three, but I might even have two, maybe even three rounds each with two guys in it.
I find I don't worry about friendly fire as much as I go through the heats and just say, could I see him winning that heat? Yeah.
Yeah.
And if I could see him winning that heat, I'll pick him. If I have a
that's
heat.
That's what you need to be doing with the whole contest, man. That's
No, but I mean, I can't get past the first round with it.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. You're spinning me in circles. I don't know. I think we fit like an hour of podcasting into the last 50 minutes. I think we were talking pretty quick off the start there.
So I want to go. I want to name out that team. I just want to make sure, too, that we're not talking about any notables that, you know, that other people might be interested in. I mean, like, oh my God, like Dusty Payne is back.
Yeah, Dusty's back. I mean, Dusty.
Because it feels, you know what I mean? He's got this I'm back thing, like that sort of magic.
Last year he
back.
Was supposed to be back
no,
and he
I know.
Did horrible.
But
now we're going to start it all over again and he's going to start the new run now that he hasn't qualified.
Seabass did well in the last contest and, you know, and he is one of those I'm back sort of guys, right? And so I'm wondering if he's going to follow in that same footsteps. Anyway, it's so weird to see him come back because he was always my alternate. Like, he just became my automatic alternate.
Dusty's only chance. I mean, if they wait to run, if they wait for it to get big to run, he might have a chance. But if it's also it's cold, man. Like, I don't like picking Hawaiians, even though I'm picking Mason because I think he's just a hellman.
Yeah.
I don't like picking sort of temperamental Hawaiians like Dusty is in cold water.
Interesting.
I mean, you saw there was the contest in San Francisco a few years ago at Ocean Beach that was really cold. And he thought he saw a shark and got all freaked out and got out of the water.
That
happens
to me every
time
I go surfing.
He's from Hawaii and he got worried about a shark. I mean, this guy, I just think, you know, if the waves are crappy, chances are it's going to be raining, cold, and he's going to be over it and he's just not going to perform.
And do you know anything about Tim Bisso or this other Tim Stevenson? These guys seem to have just popped up on my little feed here.
No, I mean, maybe they're running they're trialists. That's the only thing I could guess is if the trials were on today.
This one doesn't even have a picture. It's just Bells Beach alternate.
Okay, Jesus. There's so many alternates. I can't even keep up with them.
So crazy.
I mean, the only thing I'd say about that is in the past, some of the local wild cards have done well at Bells just because it is such a tricky wave to judge. And if you surf it every day, you sort of tend to get a feel for you know, what sections are going to go fat and what sections you're going to have to race on. And
that's the thing. This year, there are so many. I mean, just in terms of the 1,500 picks,
you've got,
like, those are good picks in a lot of cases. Like, you can easily see a lot of your 1,500s doing better than a lot of your, like, 800 to 600 guys easily.
Yeah, it's true.
Tell me about your vacation before we go.
Oh, man, I was down for a wedding, but to my luck, they decided to have the wedding in Arecibo, which is in Puerto Rico and has great waves. And we got there right in the middle of a storm, super windy and very rainy, but there were waves the 3 days as in Arecibo.
And you had the board all arranged. It was, like, ready to go.
Yeah, yeah, actually.
What about a wetsuit? Did you need a wetsuit?
No, it was warm. Oh, water was warm. Weather was good. I surfed some pretty heavy beach break right in the middle of Arecibo. There's, like, I was just sort of surfing sort of a riptide bowl off the corner right in front of the house, actually, where all these people had rented out. It was actually funny. A bunch of the boys that were there for the wedding that I didn't know saw me out surfing and hopped on their boogie boards, and one of them almost drowned.
Really?
He started getting I shouldn't joke about it.
So these guys were at the wedding but didn't have, like, water experience but had access to a boogie board?
Yeah, well, they had boogie boards at the rental.
Right.
So a couple of them jumped in and were just sitting in the shore pound.
Know.
But one guy got
the man.
Well, not that I'm the man, but I wouldn't have wanted to even get in that on a boogie board. They didn't even have fins. And he started to get sucked out in this rip, man. And I was like, I didn't want to, like, judge him. You know what I mean? Because for all I know, I don't know. The wedding were all friends of my wife, so I didn't know them.
You're going to go up to these guys.
Yeah, I didn't want
to
be.
And be like, hey,
yeah, so I sort of started, like, slowly paddling in his direction. And luckily, a wave took him in. But later, I was talking to him at the bar, and he said he was, like, had the fear of God in him. And it was serious, man. There were some serious rips there. That Puerto Rico always surprises me. We're so used to surfing our point breaks, and you might get that sort of, you know, currents around here that'll be pulling you off the peak.
Yeah.
But you don't get those sort of out-to-sea currents that just all of a sudden you're like
past the
how did I get this far past the beach? Yeah. I even got caught at one time, but, like, easily enough to paddle back. And then I also surfed a really nice left that was just, 500 meters down the beach from my vacation rental and had a lot of fun there.
It's like a surf paradise over there.
It was, man. It's under the radar, too. I was talking to a guy at the local acai stand, and he said they try to keep it under the radar up in Arecibo. So I probably shouldn't talk about it anymore. Although, also,
you just said under the radar under Arecibo.
I'm losing really it, cool. Man. It's been a busy day, dude. It's a busy day at work today.
I know. I came right from work. Like rushed down.
I know.
And like, turn it on. Yeah. Let's go. I don't have any notes in front of me whatsoever. No. But as long, you know what? As long as we got our teams in front of us.
We're all good, man. And Rincon was awesome. That was the first time I've ever been to Rincon, Puerto Rico. Had a really nice time. Stayed right on Sandy Beach. Got nice little sort of waist-high swell each day. And it was a lot of fun.
Beauty. Okay, well, that's good. Well, listen, what we'll do is I'm just going to leave you with, I do have a parting clip here that we'll go out on. So this is Mark Richards talking about what you brought up at the very beginning of the contest, talking about how well past winners of the Gold Coast do for the rest of the season. So that's the clip we'll leave you with. Until next time, thanks for listening. Send us an email, surffantasy@gmail.com.
Go Wilco!
And I think this event really sets the tone for the world title race. And you guys have mentioned on the broadcast that whoever does well in this event actually goes on to challenge for the world title or win the world title. I think you mentioned, like, you know, 60% of winners of this event in the past have won the world title.
Yeah, that was 50 for the men and 60 for the women, but overall you're absolutely right.